The gospel reading is Luke 15, and actually not the entire chapter, significantly, but the first two verses, and then the what's commonly called the parable of the prodigal son, verses 11 to 32. This is one of the cases where the lectionary has done us a service by giving us a little bit more context than we might expect. If we just started at verse 11, things might be a little bit confusing, but the parable itself is set up by the first two verses. And let me read those, and then we'll walk through the structure of this chapter. Contextually, just to start off here, contextually, this is in that section where Jesus, in chapter 9, sets his face resolutely toward Jerusalem, and then he kind of meanders about different places, different teachings, mostly on discipleship, but a few conflict issues come up before he finally reaches Jerusalem. So it's not tightly structured throughout, although chapter 15 here is sort of a nice self-contained unit. Now, verse 15, verse 1. Eson de engedontes pontus hoi telonai kai hoi hamartoloi akuin autu. But there were coming near to him, or approaching him, all the tax collectors and sinners. The pontus there, prior to the article, all the tax collectors. He probably means something like a whole bunch of them. All the tax collectors and sinners, the infinitive of purpose here, in order to hear him. Now, of course, the hymn is Jesus. Verse 2, so that's our first group, our first two groups. We got Jesus and we got bad people, tax collectors and sinners. Verse 2, Kai diagongudzon hoi te pharisaioi kai hoi grammates legantes hoti hutas hamartelus prostecetai kai synestiae autois. And the Pharisees and scribes, and diagongudzo here, the imperfect tense, kept on grumbling, you might say. Nice spectral translation. Kept on grumbling, murmuring. A nice word with Old Testament echoes. In the Septuagint, this is the murmuring of the children of Israel when they don't like what God is doing. Seems to be the case here again. Grumbling, saying that, and it's a nice onomatopoetic word, right? Gongudzo, you know, grumble. You kind of get that. Anyway. Saying that this guy, Hutas, receives or welcomes sinners, and even worse, synestio, he habitually eats with them. It's not a one-time deal. We have many examples of Jesus hanging out with people like this. So you have issues of table fellowship come up, who is righteous in the eyes of God, who is worthy to sit around a table and invoke the name of Yahweh in blessing over that food. You don't do that with just anybody, it's only certain people. Tax collectors and sinners, unstated here, are not worthy. You could actually make the case that in the synoptics, hamartoloi might refer to the Gentiles. But be that as it may, in any case, they're not people acceptable to the Pharisees and the scribes. Now, what you want to do as you walk through this text is get out a piece of paper and make four columns. You make a column for Jesus, a column for tax collectors and sinners, and a column for Pharisees. And then later on we'll see there's a column for people who are happy. And then you make three rows. One for verses 3 through 7, the parable of the lost sheep. One for verses 8 through 10, the lost coin. And then one for 11 through 32, the lost sons. And fill in the kind of grid as to which character in the parables fills in the slot that just has been introduced for us here in terms of who Jesus is addressing. So just briefly, you notice structurally the parables beginning in verse 3 and verse 8 are connected both with a tis, tis anthropos, tis gune. So same introduction and same themes. You have somebody who does seeking. You have the shepherd in the first parable. Second parable, you have the woman. Then you have the lost ones. You have one lost sheep and one lost coin. And then, quote-unquote, non-lost ones, the 99 sheep and the 9 coins. And then at the end, you get happy people. When the lost one is found, there is rejoicing in heaven. Now, what's important about this is these two parables are the gospel parables. This is where Jesus describes his work. He seeks that which cannot find itself, which cannot restore itself to the place that it belongs. It goes through great efforts to do so, and when that person is found and restored, there is rejoicing in heaven, because the kingdom of God is at work and has come to those individuals. that is not the point of the third parable. In fact, the point of the whole chapter builds up to the third parable. So if you're going to preach kind of the gospel part, that's those first two parables, and you can preach that when that comes up in the lectionary at a different time. The parable of what's called the prodigal son is not merely about Jesus finding people. It's not merely the gospel. Rather, it's directly addressing these scribes and Pharisees and what they should be doing with those whom Jesus is welcoming. There's actually two halves of the parable. There's the lost son, the younger son, who gets restored, much like the sheep and the coin. But then you have the lost older son, who is confronted with a choice. Do I welcome or do I not welcome? So let's walk through the text. Notice structurally you have a little different shift here. You have a hyphen deh at verse 11, like you had at verse 3. So it sets off this parable a little bit from the previous two. And here's the theme. Apen de anthropos tesaken duohuius. He said, a certain man had two sons. Okay, so now the stakes are higher. Not one out of 99, not one out of, or one out of 100, not one out of 10. Now it's one out of 2. Kai apen han yoderos auton to patri. And the younger one of them, genitive of comparison, said to the father, Pater, das moi, taipabalan, moros, tes usias. Father, give, a nice aorist participle of didymi, give to me the falling to me part of the wealth. You might say the usia, the stuff we live on. Okay? So give to me the stuff that would come to me. Which, to be quite honest, wouldn't be a whole heck of a lot as the younger son. He'd get a little bit. But not a great deal. What you got to understand is the wealth would not be tied up in a mutual fund or in a stock market. The wealth would be tied up in the flocks and the cattle and the fields and the property. Okay, so he's asking basically to cut your land into pieces, cut your flocks into pieces, and give it to me now. All right, pretty bold statement. Basically saying you're better to me dead than you are alive, because I want the inheritance now. Now, I like this in 12b, you have a deh, which is interesting. Some manuscripts put a chi there to kind of smooth it off, but the deh, I think, is significant because what father in his right mind would give the inheritance to the kid before it's due him, right? The father would typically smack the kid upside the head, but this father does not. He divides to them the existence, the stuff, okay? Verse 13. Chimetu, palas, himeras, synagogon, panta, honioros, huios, apodemisen, ace, koron, makron. We'll stop there for a second. And after not many days, having gathered all things, the younger son journeyed into a distant land. Now, after not many days is significant because what's he got to do to get cash, portable cash? He's got to sell land, flocks, cattle. Probably a cut rate prices. This isn't something that's been negotiated for a couple of years. So, you know, this is probably typical. Here he turns stuff over pretty quickly. Gathers the stuff together and goes somewhere else, which he would almost certainly have to do because he's not going to be able to live with his family anymore because he just sold off some of their stuff. So he's now persona non grata in his own family, in his own household, and whether by forced out or by choice, he's got to take off. Okay, what did he do when he gets to this land? Kai ehe dies scorpison tenusian autu zon asotas. And there he scattered, maybe even squandered, tossed out carelessly, like the sower, his wealth, his stuff, by living asotas. That's a nice one, like asat, right? Recklessly, foolishly. Wildly, maybe some translations render that. All right. Notice here, it's a little bit unclear what exactly he does. Is he gambling? Is he getting into poor land management deals? Who knows? We'll get that blank filled in later by the older brother, of course. But he's just living recklessly. Okay. Verse 14. The pane santas de autu, nice genitive absolute, having spent all things. With the panta there. Again, atolamos iskura kata tankoran ekene. A great famine happened over that land. Kaiotas erksato husteresti. And he began to, or came to lack, to be lack, to lack. 15. Kai parouthes ekkolethe eni ton politon tes koras akenes, kai epempsen auton eis tus agrus, autu boskein koirus. And going out, he attached, he was attached to one of the citizens of that country, and he, the citizen, sent him, the younger son, into his fields to feed pigs. Okay? In other words, Jewish boy, I don't want you hanging around, go feed the pigs, because no Jewish person should be doing that. What happens? Kai epithume kortas thenai ekton karation honestion hoi koiroi kaiudes ididu auto. Alright. And he desired to be satisfied, aorist passive infinitive, from the pods which they were feeding the pigs, scraps. Pigs eat anything, right? Corn cobs, pea pods, whatever you want to say. Worse the stuff. But nobody gave to him. So, and you could supply anything. So he sent them off into the field, and apparently he's not even getting paid. So the guy's just trying to get rid of him. All right. So what's the situation of this kid? He's got no family. He's got no money. He's got no friends in this foreign land. The people in the foreign land want to get rid of him. His family, he knows, isn't going to welcome him back. What's he going to do? Okay. He hatches a plan. Esau ton de elthon efe pasai mistheoi tu patrus mu perisuantoi arton ego de lemo hoda apolemi. Okay. Now how do you translate this? Coming to himself, he says. You know, this means he sort of woke up. He came to his senses is often how that's translated. I'm not so sure it's a great idea, you know, coming to his senses. But something smacked him across the side of the head, maybe a 2x4 or something. Anyway, how many of my father's hire workers abound in bread, have an abundance of bread, but I here am perishing by famine? So even the hired people of my father have plenty, and I'm here in this no friend, no place, and I'm dying by this famine. So, what does he do? Anastas parousomai, prostam pateramu, kai ero auto. Here's a nice use of the participle together. Anastas parousomai, the future of parousomai there. So, you know, if you wanted to be sort of a verb tense, having gotten up, I will go, but probably more idiomatically, I will get up and go, is sort of how you have to do that. The naturally antecedent action is in the aorist tense there. Getting up, I will go to my father, and I will say to him, Pater himarton es ton uranon kai enopion su. Father, I sinned against heaven and before you. So there's some recognition of a problem here. But what's his solution? Huketi emi axios kleithene huyasu poieson me hos hena ton mistheon su. No longer am I worthy to be called your son, to put it mildly. Poieson, aorist imperative, make me as one of your hired workers. Now what you got to recognize is he's not actually asking for forgiveness and reinstatement. He's asking for a better deal than he would probably get otherwise. Okay? If there's any sort of connection still with the father, maybe he'll at least give me a job. But he's not saying, forgive me and make me what I was. Okay? So I'm not sure I would quite call this repentance. He's sorry, but he doesn't think that the generosity of the father could extend to forgiveness. It's just sort of a better deal. Alright, so Kai Anastas, verse 20, Elthen Prostan Paterautu. Getting up, he came to his father. Etidau tu makron apekantos, Aiden auton ha Paterautu. Okay, while he was still a ways distant, that's an unusual word order for the genitive absolute. Usually it's participle followed by the genitive, but that's got to be what it is here. While he was still a long way distant, his father saw him, so he's watching, you would say. kai esplaknesthe kai kai draman epipesen epi ton trekalon autou kai kataphilesen auton. Right, he was moved by compassion, common word applied to Jesus, of course, and running he fell about his trachea, his neck, and he kissed him. Now, what you got to understand with this kataphilesen is not kind of a, kind of a thing. It's an aristense, he kissed him. It's a kiss of greeting. In itself, that's significant. So it's not sort of a display of affection of some kind, like, you know, your daughter comes home and you give her a bunch of kisses or something. It's a kiss of greeting. All right, Paul doesn't do that. He's laughing over here.
It's on the cheek.
It's on the cheek, right. There you go. Now, what is significant about this, and I'm just stealing this from Ken Bailey, his book, The Cross and the Prodigal, or Finding the Lost, very good stuff on this. You got to remember that the son returning to his household here would probably not be greeted very warmly. And so the father runs out to him before he even reaches the servants and the rest of the family and welcomes him, indicating to everybody around that they are to welcome him in the same way. That this is not merely a stranger coming in. It's not somebody who is going to be punished in any way. He is being welcomed back by me, and I am greeting him because he is my son. Okay? So the father, and you could almost make the point, and Bailey makes this point, that the running here is actually embarrassing for a nice patriarch of the family. Well-regarded heads of households do not run in this culture. They walk in a dignified manner. It's sort of like, and maybe I used this illustration before, it's sort of like the Pope, casting off his mitre, hiking up his robe, and running across the square at St. Peter's or something. It just doesn't happen in the middle of a service. Okay, you don't do that. All right, but the father does, and now everybody has to welcome him. All right. Now what happens? The son gets out his prepared speech. He pulls out his note card. His son says to him, same thing, Pater Hamathon, Father, I've sinned against heaven and before you. No longer am I worthy to be called your son. Now notice it stops there. He doesn't even get to his pitch for a deal. Now some manuscripts, notably Sinaiticus and Vaticanus, which sometimes people follow blindly, do insert, because of the parallel, the pitch, the deal. It's not supposed to be there, and even our quote-unquote best manuscripts go wrong sometimes. What happens instead is the son says, all right, I've been an idiot. The father cuts him off, verse 22, pater prostus doulos autou. The father says to his slaves, he doesn't even address the son. He says to his slaves, quickly fetch the taku enenkata stolen tame protein kayundasita autu. Fetch the first robe, the best robe, and clothe him. Kaidata daktulian es tenkera autu kai hupademata es tus padas. Right? So give him some clothes because no son of mine dresses this way. Give a ring to his finger because he is of the family and he wears the ring of the family seal once again. Put sandals on his feet because he ain't a servant, he's not a worker, he's a son. Right? Even better, 23, Kai ferita ton maskon ta satuton, and bring the fat cow, the grain-fed cow, I guess you'd say there almost, the fattened calf, kill it, thusita, kai phagantas oifront domen, and eating, a nice subjunctive here, let us make glad, make merry, celebrate, oifrino. It's a great verb. It even sounds happy. You know, euphrino. Oifranthamen, let us make merry. Why? 24. Hatihutas hahuyas munakras ein kai anedesen. Because this, and what does he call him? My son was dead and he lives, ein apalolos kai pirethe. And he was in a state of lossless, nice perfect participle there from Apollomy, and he was found. Kai erxanta oifranestai. And they began to make merry, if you want to translate it that way. So far, the parable of the prodigal son. Okay, but you can't stop there. So far, we have exactly what you had in the first two parables, the lost sheep and the lost coin. But the story doesn't finish. And if you're going to preach this text, you got to preach on the second half of the parable, which is dealing with the scribes and the Pharisees. So what happens? A nice death to tell us that we got a little shift in topic here. And how Prosperos, and a girl, you almost forgot about that guy, right? But his older son was in the field. Now notice, location is everything. Where is the family? They're in the house celebrating. Where is the son? In the field. Now I don't think it's too much of a stretch to have overtones like we had in verse 2 of this covenant language, right? We had this grumbling going on. Here we have a field. Often in the Old Testament, Isaiah, we have the vineyard as the dwelling of Israel. Well, here's where the guy is. He thinks he's in the right place, but is it the right place? Okay, he's in the field. And what's he doing? Kaihos erkomenos engesen te oikia. And as he was coming, he approached the house. Ekusen symphonias kai koran. He heard symphony and dancing, right? He heard music and dancing. Must have been some pretty loud dancing to hear the dancing, but that's what he heard. Kai pros kalosamenos hena ton paidon epunthanato ti an ee tauta. There's a great word. And calling one of the servants, he inquired, I like that word, he inquired, ti an ee tauta. Here, call your wife when you get home, or tell your wife when you get home you saw an optative today. AA is the optative of AME. Doesn't show up too much, but there's one on the particle of uncertainty. How do you translate this? It's almost, he inquired, what the heck these things might be. He has no clue what is happening. He's been doing his work, and there's a party going on, right? How could this be possible? Tian AA Tauta. All right, 27. He explains the situation. He said to him, and notice how he addresses him, your brother. See, the servant gets it. The servant gets that the guy's a brother again. Your brother has come, and they killed, your father killed the fat cow, because hati hugiananta autan apelabon, because he received him healthy, sound, however you want to render that. What does the son do? Or giste de kaiuk ephelim eselfain, but he was angry and did not wish to enter in, right? He has division, separation. Hode pater autu exelthon parakale auton, but his father coming out exhorted him. His father now goes to him, just like he went out to the younger son. He wants him to be a part of the family as well, whereas right now he's not. 29, Hoda Akbukathe Sapin Ta Patriot 2, answering, he said to his father, I love this, Idu, look, Tasata Hete, I'm sorry, Ete Dulus, Duluosoi Kai Udapota, Entelain Su Parelthon. How many years do I labor for you, do I slave for you, and never have I transgressed your command? See, what is this son's relationship to his father based on? Not a very healthy relationship. And Kayamoi Udapota Edokas Erephon Hina Meta Ton Falanmu Oifranto. And to me, never have you given a goat, in order that with my friends I might make merry. Now notice, if this guy's going to have a party, who is it going to be with? Not with his father. He sees his relationship with his father as a slave relationship. If he's going to have a party, he's going to go hang out with his friends. See, something ain't working right here. Okay. So who's really the lost one in this story? Verse 30. Hata de hahuyas su hutas ha katafagan su tambia metapornon elfen. Right? Here's where you get the rotten story. But when this, your son, see, he's not my brother, he's your son, the one who, having devoured your wealth with harlots, comes. So you got to fill in the blanks, ratchet it up a little bit. Ethusas autu, or auto, ton, satutan, moskan. You kill for him the fat cow. So he ain't too happy. Verse 31, here's the invitation. But he said to him, the father said to him, Teknon, su pantate metamoi, or metamue, Kai panta ta emasa esten. Right? Child, you are always with me, and all things which are mine are yours. Right? So it's all there for his taking. Okay, 32. Euphranthenai de kai karenai ere. Hatiha adafasu hutas nekrasen kai edzisen kai apalolos kai hirethe. All said before. But to rejoice and, or I'm sorry, to make merry and to rejoice was necessary because your brother, this your brother, notice how he addresses him, he's your brother, was dead and he lives, he was lost and he is found. Now what you don't get at the end of the parable is what the response of the older brother is going to be. Why? Because the Pharisees and the scribes have to answer the question. They are the older brother, and the tax collectors and sinners are the younger brother, the one who lived recklessly, the one who hasn't been following the law, the one who deserves absolutely nothing, yet is given freely and with no merit on his own part the kingdom. The older brother thinks the kingdom is his, although his relationship with his father isn't working right. He thinks it's all his, and there is no way the kingdom works this way. If this is the kind of kingdom that is, I don't want a part of it. And the father goes out of his way to welcome even this son, who doesn't understand what this relationship is, to enter into this relationship with him. And of course, by entering into relationship with the father, he also enters into relationship with the younger brother, the tax collectors and sinners. Now, what do you do with this parable? Right? The parable is addressed to those who think the kingdom belongs to them and to nobody else. That they decide who comes in and who does not come in. They decide on what terms they accept people. Now, as a pastor, one issue you will want to sort through as you look to apply this text is, does this ever happen in your congregation? Are there divisions? Are there groups that see themselves as we have the kingdom, not them? Perhaps even a congregation that sees itself as having salvation, but no need to go and seek and save that which is lost. The very mission of Jesus is to go out and seek and find that which cannot find itself, that which does not deserve to be a part of a family at all. And the older brother is simply to participate in and celebrate in the work of restoring, of seeking, and of finding. And then they celebrate. They have a party. Somebody new comes in and you don't just print the name in the bulletin, you have a party. Because this is what happens in the kingdom of heaven. The angels in heaven are rejoicing over one sinner. Why should we not celebrate and share together in the celebration, ultimately in the Eucharist, and ultimately on the last day? So go ahead. All right, we're out of time.